Karen, are you still delivering direct care services at Northeast Behavioral Health?
I'm not, because of policy changes they made. They were actually bought out and didn't allow the part-time work I was doing. So I'm actually doing private practice now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I can see how that can be even better in the long run. A nice step, a nice transition.
not one I would have taken on my own, but there it was, right?
That's right. Well, Karen, one of the things that you've helped us really begin to grasp is that suicide is prevalent, so prevalent that it's affecting both genders. It is almost affecting the entire age spectrum. I mean, you talk about from age 10 to, I imagine, to our senior citizens.
You're correct. Correct.
And so how about when it comes to class and ethnicity?
You know, it's interesting. You bring up class. The interesting thing is that it doesn't seem to be different in different classes, different socioeconomic levels. It does differ, by the way, in race ethnicity. So most of the suicides do occur with the white population. The one thing I would stress in that, though, is that because we might find higher numbers in certain populations versus others, it doesn't mean we should ignore or think, hey, we're home free if we're working with somebody of a different race ethnicity, because there are people who die by suicide in all races, in all ethnicities. And one of the things that they found in research is just that, you know, certain people might be more vulnerable to suicidal thinking for a variety of reasons due to perhaps experience of discrimination or difficulties with acculturation if the person has moved here from another country, difficulties with a sense of identity because of race ethnicity issues. So, history of oppression, there can be all kinds of reasons that can create vulnerability for people in different races and ethnicities.
And so as you're sharing with us, no group is immune. So none
Correct.
Of us, like you say, should conclude that we're home free. Don't need to think about it.
Right. I like how you put that.
Well, something that, you know, we're looking at this, I guess, from two angles at the same time, one having to do with suicide as it affects society in general, but also, as we can tell from the title of your book, the subtitle in particular, Preventing Suicide, a Handbook for Pastors, Chaplains, and Pastoral Counselors, we're also looking at this from the standpoint of how this is addressed in religion within the faith community. And of course, that means that a lot of the people who might be going for help are going to be members of the faith community. And that leads to a question that is so intriguing. It almost suggests that there's some type of oxymoron going on here. And that's this. We know that so often, particularly within the Christian faith, that two of the experiences that people are promised once they really make a sincere connection with Christ are peace and joy.
So
that leads to the question, if indeed we are to be experiencing peace and joy, how is it that anyone who is reportedly a Christian can also experience sadness, maybe even to the point of being depressed, and depression or other symptoms, maybe even to the point of being suicidal?
Exactly, Carl. And I should say that in interviews we've done with clergy, one of the things that surprised me initially was just that one of the questions that people come to clergy and ask them about is, why am I not experiencing the Christian joy? So really, that is the kind of question that suicidal people tend to ask clergy, in addition to potentially other theological questions. But I mean, it mostly because it's such a difficult experience to be in the middle of depression, and I think there is a sense in our faith community sometimes that we're too blessed to be depressed, and so we really shouldn't experience those kinds of things. But I have to say, as I've thought about it, first of all, I should say just that there are many Christians who do experience depression. I mean, we read about people in books who have experienced depression. I mean, one example, and there are just many examples I could come up with, but one example is Edward J. Carnell, the past president of Fuller Seminary, who, struggled with depression and struggled with suicidal thinking. And he was just a very fine theologian in the evangelical church. So we have examples of people like this who struggled. And I think, there are a number of ways to think about this, but one of them is just that we do live in a broken world. We are sinned against, so we experience the sin that when people sin against us, we ourselves are sinful. We're part of a broken world, and our genetics are broken, so we may be genetically vulnerable to certain illnesses. And depending on your particular perspective with depression, I mean, some people have the perspective that it's a biological illness, so that would be an example of that genetic brokenness in the world that we live in. I think there are a number of reasons like that. I mean, certainly, Satan is on the prowl, wanting to destroy those who are created in God's image. I mean, that's another potential reason. When we experience suffering, sometimes we suffer in more Christian ways, and sometimes we suffer in less Christian ways because we're on that road to maturity. We're on that road to becoming more and more like Christ, but we're not there yet. And sometimes we struggle in ways that are not mature Christian ways. So, I mean, and the last reason I'll just mention is that in the Bible, we certainly find in the Bible, passages like in Philippians 4, rejoice always. But at the same time, we find passages like Psalm 88, which is a lament psalm, a psalm where the psalmist is lamenting his situation before God, his loss of friendships, and the psalm ends with darkness is my only companion. So I think we have to live in the tension of the fact that in the Bible we see both of those perspectives.
Wow, that is...
It's so complicated, but I guess that would be a short answer to the question.
But it makes so much sense, though, and it really, I think, helps bring clarity to the reality of the Christian life. It is about experiencing peace and joy, but because, as you said, we live in a broken world, it is also about experiencing sadness, and for some people, to the point of depression. I even think about the great Paul and how he was the one who wrote Rejoicing. Again, I say rejoicing, yet he talked about some of his experiences with sadness through some of the trials that he went through.
Absolutely. And just saying, hey, we were pushed beyond our limits, he says in 2 Corinthians. So, yeah, absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, stay with us. Dr. Karen Mason really shedding some tremendous insights about the reality of suicide in the world in general, within the faith community in particular, but also moving towards a discussion of what we can do about it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.